Hello, friends. I'm Michael Tomlinson, and I serve as Chief Operating Officer at Family Talk. May the Lord profoundly bless you this Christmas season. Thank you for listening and standing with the ministry for family values in our great nation.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to today's Christmas edition of Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk. I'm Dr. Meg Meeker, along with your host, psychologist and best-selling author, Dr. James Dobson. And Dr. Dobson, today we're going to continue a program that we started yesterday that really was one of your favorites of the year.
Well, it was not only one of mine, Dr. Meeker, but it was also a favorite of our listeners because we are able to tell from the response that we get how people enjoy particular programs. And this one was right near the top. And we're airing it now again because every December we revisit the programs that our listeners have told us were what we call the best of the best for the year. And I'm really glad that today's program was among those. Rabbi Jonathan Kahn not only visited with us in the studio this year, but he actually spoke at the 2014 National Day of Prayer event in Washington, D.C. This year. And I know that our listeners are going to really enjoy what he has to say. I'm excited to get to part two of this excellent broadcast, and there will be another one next time, part three. But they are all titled The Harbinger After Rabbi Kahn's Book by the same title.
It really was a great show yesterday. For those of our listeners who weren't able to tune into yesterday's broadcast, I'd like to introduce Rabbi Kahn to them. Rabbi Jonathan Kahn leads Hope of the World, an outreach dedicated to spreading the word and the love of God to all in need. He does this through multimedia broadcasts and projects of compassion to the world's poorest. Rabbi Kahn also leads the Jerusalem Center. This is a worship center made up of people of all nations, both Jew and Gentile, and it's located just outside of New York City. So let's get to our program now. Here is the second part of our interview with Rabbi Jonathan Kahn on today's Best of the Best Christmas edition of Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk.
You head up the Jerusalem Center for Beth Israel?
Yes.
Is that the way to say it?
Yeah.
And this is in Wayne, New Jersey?
Yes.
And the whole world is open to you because of The Harbinger, hasn't it?
Yes, yeah.
How many books do you suppose you have
sold? It's heading towards 2 million at this point.
In what period of time?
About 2 years. Wow. It came out in January 2012, and it's still, things are not slowing down. It's been speeding up.
Well, it took me 2 years to find it. And I'm telling you, I hope our listeners will read this book, and many of them have, and they will understand what it is we're talking about today. But it has to do with departing from the faith as a nation.
Yes.
There is individual guilt and responsibility, and there is national guilt. Mm-hmm. And we're soaked in both of them, I think, at this time.
Yes.
What led you to write this book? I mean, it's highly prophetic, and yet it's tied directly to Scripture. There's nothing really spooky in there. It is straight out of the Scriptures.
Yeah. I wasn't planning on it. You know, I wasn't looking for it. But we are located right outside New York City. So when 9/11 happened, we could see it across the river. So it affected the congregation. I was praying, and I was led immediately to the section of Scripture. It's Isaiah chapter 9 and 10, which speaks about the first warning strike that came on Israel before its judgment. It came in the form of an attack, and it came in the form of terrorism. And I saw that connection, but I didn't go further. But later on, I found out that David Wilkerson, who was speaking in Times Square Church, that next week, he said, the word of the Lord for America is, and he then started reading Isaiah 9 and Isaiah 9, 10, which is the key of the harbinger. And he didn't see the harbinger.
Quote that for us so we know the context.
The people of Israel, the first strike happens. It's a wake-up call in the form of an attack on the land. And the people respond, instead of with repentance, they respond with defiance. And they make a vow that Isaiah records, Isaiah 9:10. They said, the bricks have fallen in the attack, but we will rebuild with hewn stone. The sycamores have been cut down, but we will plant cedars in their place. What they're telling God is, we're not going to repent. We're going to come back stronger than ever without you. We're not going to turn back our course. We're going to be defiant. And so what God says to Isaiah is, because they are responding to my wake wake-up call with Defiance, this is the signs of judgment. And this becomes the beginning of the harbingers. All the harbingers are, in a sense, in that verse. So I found out about that later, but later on, I was standing at the corner of Ground Zero in New York City, and my attention becomes transfixed on an object, and the object is the tree that was struck down. And something said, you have to seek this out. There's a mystery here. You have to find it. And so I began to seek it out, and I was led to Isaiah 9:10 right away. And then it became the first puzzle piece of this ancient mystery from the Bible that kept getting bigger and bigger and bigger until I was blown away by it totally. And every time I needed like the next key, something would happen. Somebody would say a word that would be the next key, you know, or something would accidentally appear on my computer that was the next key. So I began to share with the congregation. They were blown away and they said, this has got to go to the nation. Well, I didn't do anything for a while, but then I was led to start writing a book. So I started writing and then more happened. The economy collapsed. And so there became a second series of revelations on this. And then finally, I was led to rewrite it totally in the form of a narrative, because there's a lot of heavy things and a lot of deep things in the Harbinger to reach as many people as possible. The Lord used allegory and stories. So in 1 hour, the whole story came. So it's fact, but it's framed in a story to make it very easy. So that came. And once I started writing in the words of the prophet in the story, it just wrote itself. It literally, every time I sat down, it wrote itself. Rapid fire.
Well, I want to make sure our listeners understand this. You find a historical account in Isaiah 9 and 10
yes.
that shows what arrogance does, where people depart from the faith. And then when there are wake-up calls, as you indicated, and there is a message that something is not right here, instead of addressing that and repenting, they were arrogant and determined to fix it themselves.
Yes.
And you saw a relationship between that and what happened in 9/11 in America.
Yeah, and I wasn't looking for it, but it became unavoidable, one thing after the other. The Harbinger is really an ancient mystery that lies behind not only 9/11, but the collapse of the economy. It's so specific that it actually gives the words that American leaders speak before they say them. It gives exact dates of when some of the most traumatic events have happened. For instance, the collapse of Wall Street, the exact hours that goes back to Moses. I mean, this is all in the Bible. God doesn't change. You know, the way he works doesn't change. You know, and it involves nine harbingers, or the nine prophetic signs that appeared in the last days of ancient Israel before judgment came. And they are warning the nation. And Israel ignored them and was destroyed. Well, the stunning thing is those same nine harbingers are now reappearing on American soil. It affects everything. It affects our economy. It affects the politics. It affects our bank accounts. It affects our future. And so it became unavoidable. I wasn't looking for anything, but it is so specific. It's not general. It's precise. It's happening before our eyes. And then the Lord almost forced this to go forth.
Now, when you say the actual date of the Wall Street collapse, and we've been in economic decline ever since, was predicted, where was that prophecy?
In the book, it's called The Mystery of the Shemitah. And Shemitah is the Hebrew word for the Sabbath year. Every 7 years, there was a year of rest, no buying or selling and all that. But on the last day of that Shemitah year, something strange happens. All the debts are wiped out. All the nation's credits wiped out. All the bank account, financial accounts are wiped clean. It was to be a blessing. But when Israel turned away from God, the Shemitah turns from a blessing to a sign of judgment on a nation that is driving God out of its life, and that specifically strikes the financial realm. Now, what does it have to do with America? America is not under the law, but America was founded like Israel was founded for God's glory and has been blessed. But here's the key. If we turn away from God, here the Shemitah as a sign can reappear. The key of the Shemitah is this 7-year cycle.
Starting with 9/11.
Well, you got the first shaking in 9/11. Then you have the second shaking is the collapse of the American economy. Happens in 2008. That's 7 years. It happened in September of 2008. That's 7 years to the month of 9/11. It happened the second week of September. That's to the week when the second shaking came on Wall Street. But the greatest collapse in American history happened on September 29, 2008. Greatest. That morning, they went into the New York Stock Exchange to ring the bell, and the bell refused to ring. Even Wall Street took it as an omen. What day was the greatest crash in American history? That day was Elul 29, the day that is the day of the Shemitah, appointed to wipe away financial accounts of a nation that is departing from God. The exact day down to the hours. And if you go back 7 years from that crash, it brings you to September 2001, you have 9/11, you have the other greatest crash in American history. It happened September 17th. It was caused by 9/11. That's 7 years, give or take 2 weeks. But it gets more stunning, because if you strip away the Western calendar, go back to the Hebrew, the other greatest collapse in American history happened on the exact same biblical day of the Shemitah, Elul 29, when financial accounts had to be wiped away. The two greatest crashes in American history happened exactly 7 biblical Hebrew years apart, down to the day, down to the hour. Nobody could have done that but God. And that is the warning. There's a prophetic warning in it. The word Shemitah means to collapse. That if America's blessings are all from God, if America doesn't turn back to God, that our blessings will be removed from the land.
That is eerie, but a prophecy always is, because we have an opportunity to see the mind of God. Now, what did the Jewish people do in the day of Isaiah that showed this arrogance that I was talking about?
Well, the first thing is they started driving God out of their government, out of their culture, out of the lives of their children. They started calling, as we said, evil good and good evil. They started promoting sexual immorality. They started lifting up their children on the altars of the gods. And then when God shook them to warn them with this first strike, instead of coming back to God, they said, we're coming back stronger. So we're going to rebuild stronger than ever before. We're going to show God that we cannot be humbled. And so as they do this—
So they rebuilt the walls.
They rebuilt the walls. They rebuilt the towers. And rebuilding isn't wrong, but rebuilding in arrogance without God is. Yeah. Because God was saying, come back to me. Instead, they say, no, we're going to come back stronger and keep on going away from you. So here the harbingers begin to appear. And we could talk about some of them, because what happens after 9/11 is America starts reenacting the same path of ancient Israel. And the leaders are part of it as well. I'll give you an example. One of the nine harbingers is called the Stone of Judgment, or the Gazit Stone. And here's what happened. The people said, the bricks are fallen, but we will rebuild with hewn stone, bigger, better, stronger. They go up to the mountains. They quarry out this massive rock. In Hebrew, the word is Gazit Stone. It means a massive cut, chiseled rock. They bring it back to the ground where the bricks had fallen, the destruction ground. And this becomes their symbol that we're going to build stronger and higher, God, come back, you know, better than ever. Well, here's what happens in America. After 9/11, the people of New York go up to the mountains of New York. They quarry out a stone. It's a biblical Gazit stone. They bring the stone to ground zero. They lower it on the pavement. They have a ceremony around the stone with American leaders vowing vows of defiance over the stone, saying this is the symbol that we're going to come back stronger than ever, which you find in the commentaries of Isaiah 9:10 about ancient Israel. That is just one harbinger, and they don't know what they're doing. Nobody's trying to make the harbingers come true. They come true because they're manifesting as signs. If you go down the vow of Isaiah, he says the sycamores have been struck down. This is a biblical sign of judgment, that when the attack happened, the sycamores of the land were struck down. And you find this in the Bible again and again. The striking down of a tree is a warning. God is saying, if you don't come back to me, you're going to be uprooted. So what could this have to do with America? Well, in the last moments of 9/11, it's the last towers coming down. It sends forth a shockwave and pieces of the building fly off and they strike an object. They strike a tree that happens to be there at the corner of Ground Zero. The tree that they strike is the sycamore, the biblical sign. The sycamore is struck down at Ground Zero. The sycamore has fallen. The
people, honestly, it
a
is
a literal sycamore.
Yeah. A literal sycamore tree, the American version. The people actually put it on display. They make it a symbol. They call it the sycamore of Ground Zero. They have no idea what it means, but everything that Isaiah records, they said then, happens specifically. The next thing he said, the sycamores have fallen, but the people said, we will plant cedars in their place. Another act of defiance. God, you're not humbling us. We're going to take a stronger tree. tree and put it right where the sycamore stood to show you we're going to come back like this tree. The English says cedar, but the Hebrew word is erez tree, which means literally a tree of strength, but it could be a cedar or a spruce. It means an evergreen, pine, conifer tree. So according to this, they took this other tree, planted it exactly where the sycamore had fallen, and this became a symbolic tree of their saying we're going to come back stronger. And so what does that have to do with America? 2 years after 9/11, a tree appears in the sky. It's over the corner of Ground Zero. It's being lowered down into the exact spot where the sycamore of Ground Zero had been struck down. They are performing the exact same ritual act that Israel did in its last days. They set this tree down. What kind of tree? It wasn't a sycamore, which would be the natural tree. They replace it with a pine, panacea, conifer. It's a biblical erez tree, the same tree of judgment of Isaiah 9:10. And they have a ceremony around the tree. They pronounce words, say this tree is a symbol that we cannot be conquered. They call it the tree of hope, but it's not a hope in God. It's a hope that we're going to come back just as Israel does. And nobody is planning this out. Nobody's trying to make it happen. It just happens. You know, this it couldn't have happened if that sycamore wasn't struck down. The terrorists had no idea. And neither did the people who put up this tree. Every single harbinger comes true with this specific fulfillment, every single one.
Now, we're on which harbinger?
Well,
now?
We just talked about just about three of the nine, but we can go to the eighth harbinger, which gets even more stunning.
And I just think for my own self and organization, for our listeners out there, I think it might be important to kind of go through the first eight harbingers. And if it's okay, I'll just read them.
Sure.
Good idea.
And these are signs. The first harbinger is the breach.
Yes.
The second harbinger you call the terrorist. The third is the fallen bricks. And this is what happened at grounds on 9/11.
Yes.
Is that correct?
Yes.
The fourth harbinger is the tower. And this was the act of defiance of the nation, saying we'll build stronger, better, taller. The fifth harbinger you just spoke about was the Gazit stone. And the sixth is the sycamore. The seventh harbinger is the Erez tree. And then that brings us up to the eighth, which you call the utterance.
Yes.
So could you take us from the utterance on forward?
Yes.
This is the one that really captured me.
Yeah. Well, one of the harbingers is this. There had to be a leader in ancient Israel to actually make the vow, because only if a leader says it can he speak for the nation and can he chart the course. So a leader would have said it, this vow, in the capital city, which was Samaria, where they resided. Well, for this to come true in America, an American leader would actually have to pronounce a vow of defiance and judgment on the nation. And what American leader in their right mind is going to do this? I mean, and certainly not one who's running for office. Well, 3 years after 9/11, on the anniversary of 9/11, an American leader gets up in Washington, D.C. He's running for vice president. He's John Edwards. He gets up before a congressional caucus and he opens up to speak about 9/11, the attack. He says, "We have this word," and out of his mouth comes the ancient vow of destruction, of judgment that was uttered by the leaders of ancient Israel, now by an American leader. And he says, "The bricks have fallen, but we will rebuild with hewn stone. The sycamores have been cut down. We will plant cedars in their place." He has no idea what he's saying. He has no idea. Out of 30,000 verses of the Bible, he chooses the one. I mean, this is crazy because, you know, speechwriters are so careful to vet everything they do. If you just looked one verse up or down, you'd see this is a vow of judgment. Not only does he say it, but John Edwards builds his entire speech around the vow. He says, "We're going to put up the cedars. We're going to put up the stone." He keeps going on. The whole speech is Isaiah 9:10. He has no idea. He also has no idea that it's actually happening in America. It's not just figurative. It's actually manifesting. All these things, all these harbingers are manifesting in America. Has no idea what he did. No idea. But it gets even more eerie because if you go back to the day after 9/11, now this is the ninth harbinger, the prophecy where it's spoken on a national level right after the attack, and what is said comes true. The American government gathers on Capitol Hill. This is September 12th, day after 9/11, to give the response of the nation. One man is chosen to give that response. It's Tom Daschle. He's the Senate Majority Leader. He gets up to the podium before the entire United States Congress from Capitol Hill. He gives America's response at the final pinnacle of his speech. He says, "We have a passage from Isaiah that speaks to us now." And then having no idea what he's about to do, He pronounces the vow of judgment on Capitol Hill before the entire government. The bricks have fallen. We will rebuild with dressed stone. He goes on. He speaks about the tree being struck down. He has no idea there's an actual tree that's just being discovered that day.
So it's Isaiah 9:10.
Isaiah 9:10. It's in the annals of Congress. This is what blew me away. I had no idea that it was there. That America's response was the exact same words from ancient Israel. Ancient Israel's vow becomes the vow of America. He speaks of the stone that's going to go up. That's going to happen 3 years later. It's like prophetic. He speaks of the replacing of the one tree with the other. That's going to happen 2 years later. At the end of his speech, he says, that is what we will do. He's referring to Isaiah 9:10. He's saying America is going to follow the course of ancient Israel without realizing he's saying it, but that's what he says. And so, you know, if we were there on Capitol Hill, we would have seen something prophetic. It was all spoken then, and it's going to set the course for the second shaking of America. The harbingers, we just touched on just a few of them, are the beginning, not the end. It's the beginning of where we are now. And it's going to set the course for the second shaking of America.
All right. Now, our time is really running out. You've got to talk about George Washington.
Okay.
And what he did.
Okay.
This one was just unbelievable.
In the book, this is called The Mystery Ground. And that is that there's a principle in the Bible that when the shaking or the destruction comes to the nation, it returns to the same ground where the nation was dedicated to God. And that happened with Israel. That was the Temple Mount. And that was where Solomon dedicated the temple and prayed for the future of the nation. That's actually when God gave Solomon that word, if my people.
Yes.
And so what happens is when the judgment came, it returned to the same exact ground where the nation was consecrated, dedicated to God in prayer, the Temple Mount. What does it have to do with America? America, as we know it, came into existence, not in 1776, but 1789. For the first time, we had a president over the Congress. First time, Constitution formed government. And it's the day that George Washington is sworn in as president. He puts his hand on the Bible and he takes the oath, and then he gives this prophetic warning. And the warning we alluded to was basically saying that what will happen if America ever turns away from God? All its blessings are from God. We can never turn away from God or the blessings are going to be removed. And so he says that warning in that first address. And then the entire first government of America on the first day goes to the appointed place to pray. The first act of the American government isn't to pass a bill. It's to pray and dedicate America's future to God. So they do that on the appointed ground. Where was it? It was in the capital city. The capital city wasn't Washington, D.C. It was New York City, where America, and this is just of God, America was dedicated to God. Its consecration ground is ground zero. The calamity returns to the ground where the nation was dedicated to God. This was a sign saying, America, you have departed from your foundation. You have to return. And on that day, a shockwave goes forth from ground zero and strikes Federal Hall, where Washington gave the warning of what would happen if America ever turned away from God, and puts a crack in the foundation of America's foundation. And all around ground zero, all the buildings are destroyed or ruined except one. One is protected. They called it the miracle of 9/11. It was the little stone chapel where America was dedicated to God in prayer. And the reason why they said it was protected is there was an object that shielded and took the full force of 9/11. What was the object? It was one of the nine harbingers. It was the sycamore that saved the church. So the message of the harbinger is not to condemn America to judgment. It is to wake America from judgment. The point is God would not send a warning if there was no hope of turning back.
Mm.
And so that is the message. It, all there, back to the mystery ground where we all began.
Rabbi, all this just takes my breath away. I mean, you're telling it very rapidly, but read the book, everyone. Read it,
yes,
and you will see the validity of what's being said here and the underlying message of this entire revelation can be summed up with the words return or judgment. We have a choice between the two.
Yes.
Right now, we're taking the path of judgment, and America will pay a price for it.
Mm-hmm.
And that is the message of the harbinger.
It's the word of the prophets again and again. And it's because America has been so blessed by God that much is required. But yes, it's either revival or judgment. And I believe God's heart is revival. I mean, God's heart is not judgment. And that's why he warns. If there was no hope at all, why warn? He's warning because he loves America, because of what America has been. But it needs to turn back. We are at a crucial, critical hour. That's what the message is. And the harbingers are a sign of how late we are.
Well, Dr. Meg, I have found this fascinating, and I can see you're being affected by it too. And I believe our listeners are being impacted by it. But there's more here,
yes.
And I
there's
can't stop
more.
Now. And there have been three harbingers since the book was written, believe it or not. And we're going to do one more program, and you and I will summarize what's happened at the beginning of the next program, and then we'll go right for where do we go from here.
Absolutely.
And Rabbi Kahn, thank you for writing the book. Thank you for being sensitive to the word of the Lord. Thank you for believing in the ancient prophecies and seeing that God is the same yesterday, today, and forever. And
Thank you so much. The
wake-up call must be heeded, or it is return or judgment.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. Thank you. And thank you for being faithful. You've been a watchman long before I did anything like this. Thank you.
Blessings to you, brother.
Thank you. Well, I hate to cut in here, but once again, we're out of time for today. We'll share the conclusion of our interview with Rabbi Jonathan Kahn next time. We've been listening to the second part of one of our best programs of the year titled The Harbinger, right here on Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk. I'm Dr. Meg Meeker, and if you would like more information about Rabbi Kahn or his book, The Harbinger, please visit our website, drjamesdobson.org, or call us at 877-732-6825. I would like to say Merry Christmas, everyone. Thank you so much for listening today, and we'll see you again next time for the conclusion of this program right here on Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk.
Family Talk is not affiliated with Focus on the Family.